tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Welcome to episode 114 of In Tech We Trust. My name is Yadin Porter de Leon.
And I'm Lauren Malhoit.
Excellent. You know, Lauren, the first time I ever met you, it's just us today, by the way, folks. Just the two of us. Nice and cozy. So grab a blanket and a snifter of root beer and curl up by the fire because you're about to just get the Lauren Yadin show today.
It's going to be exciting. Don't turn off the podcast quite yet.
Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about. We've got the USB killer, which is exciting. Blow up your friend's laptop for fun. Amazon unveils a smart convenience store, fully automated shopping experience, which I think is going to be really interesting. Software can be more secure, hashtag duh. Apple Watch sales go off a cliff. The Arista Cloud Vision bug and HPE versus autonomy. Before the show started, I was about to tell a story, and I just wanted to jot it out and save it for the show. Well, I remember the first time I met you, Lauren, I was actually at the V-Mug down in San Jose. And now I have the distinction of co-hosting a podcast with you. And I just want to say it's been a fantastic ride to glory. And I've reached great heights.
This is your version of glory, Yadin. We need to have some talks about your goals.
You can tell I've set the bar pretty high here. And I walked up, I'm like, oh, hey, I know you from In Tech We Trust. Great job on the show. And
you were like, one listener at the time.
Yeah, and then there was this awkward moment where I didn't know what else to say. Like, so just keep up the stuff you do on that show. Okay, I'm going to go talk to Amy Lewis and Matt Brender now.
They're better at improvising than I am, perhaps. We did a panel that day, though, and you asked a lot of great questions, I remember, and it was a good time. That was a good V-Mug.
Yeah, there needs to be more V-Mugs down here in the Valley. Why aren't there more V-Mugs?
They've had such trouble with the V-Mugs there. I guess we're going off on a tangent. Why not? Let's go for it.
Yeah, let's go. We're going all in here.
Yeah, I remember Angelo Luciani actually used to run the SVV mug, which was weird because he was living in Toronto at the time and running that V mug as well. And just, I guess it's maybe an oversaturation of meetups and just being Silicon Valley-ish that people don't go.
Yeah, by default, we're always meeting up here in the Valley.
Right.
There's a bunch of tech
Everything's
people
a user group.
Constantly drinking beer in the same location. Therefore, by default, it's pretty much a duplicative to have a quote-unquote V-mug event. So we're always V-mugging in one way or another. Or maybe that would be V-beers. Yeah, always be V-mugging. That's going to be the name of the show right there. So a little bit shorter show since it's just Lauren and myself. Thank you all that you are continuing to listen at this point. Wanted to just kick it off with you, Lauren. Lauren, NIST says that software can be more secure. What do you think about that?
No, I think they're wrong. There's no way.
Software is as secure as it possibly gets. It's just the same. I think the same theory that rock and roll could not get any better since 1977, where it reached its peak, and therefore software cannot be more secure than it can be. 2016, we're as secure as we can possibly. What is Lauren? What does NIST have to add to this conversation?
They're basically saying that the typical 1,000 lines of code has at least 25 errors, right? So per 1,000, and we need to cut down on that to make it more secure.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
We need to reduce. Great. So, I think the good analogy is like how many autonomous car deaths are there? Okay, whatever that number is, we need to bring it down.
Make it less.
Make it less.
They're saying that, you know, we should have tools that can help us with this first of all error identification, maybe some sort of testing, things like that. But they're also saying that coders should be using not just the code that they're familiar with, but the code that is proper for that task. So I mean, I guess they have a point there, but it's still kind of common sense to me. I don't know why this is really, maybe I'm missing something in the article, but I would expect something a little more from NIST, maybe some sort of actual answer or solution to this problem.
Well, it's got to be in there somewhere, because asking for more from NIST, I'm not sure if that's the right approach. Maybe clarity, because the NIST, just for all of your reading pleasure, if you'd like to download NIST IR 8151, it's a lovely 50 pages long on how and including a table of acronyms, a couple of pages, which is very delightful. So I'd highly recommend maybe taking a quick glance at the table of contents.
It's like reading 1984. With, like, the dictionary for Newspeak or whatever, which I skipped, clearly.
Yeah, I think that's apt. I think that's very apt. But yes, so I think yes, dramatically reducing software vulnerabilities, which is what the report that the article says got dropped, which I think is a good adjective to use for the size and volume of this, is definitely stating some things, yes, the obvious, but like you said, there's some specifics that I think can more read like a best practices. I'm thinking maybe we get more of a, you know, I'm in marketing, so this is the way I see things, you know, more of a top of the funnel kind of thought piece, like 6 steps for making software more secure. NIST, can we get that from you guys, maybe? If there are any NIST listeners out there, feel free to tweet us at InTechWeTrust and let us know if that's in the pipeline.
I like it. Yeah, condense it.
Yeah, bring it. Cut it down. Cut down 50 pages to a 2-sheeter. We'll call it NIST IR 8151B. Just 2-sheeter.
A brochure.
6 ways.
Really.
Yes. 6 ways to dramatically reduce software vulnerabilities. It's a checklist, if you will. And I'll put that on my whitelist paper. We were just talking about white papers before this. So, top of the funnel. That's what we need. Top of the funnel.
Number 1, reduce errors.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, maybe moving on, unless you want to talk more about that, Lauren.
No, I didn't read the 50 pages, so maybe I'll have more prepared next week, and I can maybe do a book report on the 50 pages NIST has prepared.
Yeah, maybe you can distill that down to a 2-sheeter.
Yeah, just one. What I need.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, there was one other thing I wanted to talk about too, which I thought was hot, like literally temperature hot, and this is this USB device killer. Not just doesn't kill USB devices, so I think the title of some of these articles is a kind of a misnomer. They need to learn how to use punctuation correctly. This USB actually kills what you plug it into. It doesn't kill other USBs, so it's not going to run around killing, you know, other USBs and plugged into other things. But what it is, it's like this, is this cool? I don't know, have you heard about this, Lauren? I know you've...
No, it brings up the USB condom conversation.
Oh, my God, that's right. But I wonder if you had a USB condom, would the USB killer work? Now maybe we need to work on see if that's the case. But yeah, no, this is something with it's this USB with a whole bunch of high capacity capacitors in it that basically draws juice in, and once it's reached a certain amount of charge, it sends a high voltage charge into the device and keeps doing that, charging and putting the high voltage charge into the device, like overloading whatever system it's plugged into, and does that over and over and over again until the thing's completely dead. And this apparently is available for the bargain price of $50 if you want to kill somebody else's device.
That's kind of awesome. I mean, it sucks, right? Like, it's horrible, and I hope it never happens to any of us. But it's a cool idea, just using charge, basically. Like when I plugged my headphones into the USB port earlier, and the computer told me that I had caused a power surge in the USB port. So maybe I just developed a USB killer for, you know, $19 or whatever I paid for the headphones.
There you go. Just built into your headset. See? Dual purpose. See, now if I'm like a black hat in Las Vegas and someone's handing out USB sticks now, I'm going to think twice before, ooh, free USB stick. Maybe not. Maybe not.
Does your wife have a laptop of her own?
No, she's got the desktop.
Oh.
She had two tablets.
Is there
and
a
laptop.
USB port that you can test?
Yeah,
on her computer
can test that. We have an old one, actually. It's one of those old ones that she doesn't use anymore. I could try that out just for fun. And there's a nice video too. You can find them online for those who want to see demos of this, where they've actually chicken it off and they've used, I think, Raspberry Pis too. They've like just had them open up and they stuck the USB in the water. You can watch it blow up. It's really great. Or smoke and stuff.
I was going to ask, do you physically see it
like just
up?
Disintegrate? Yeah. There's some videos that show it. I mean, it kind of smokes a little bit, It's not that impressive, actually, if you really want to watch the video.
I'd want some, like, sparking, at least.
Yeah, you'd think so. But, you know, it's a little on the schmeh side.
Yeah. It's still pretty cool that they can do that. I mean, it's, again, I'm not condoning this, but it's kind of cool.
Yeah, so you can, it's funny, I'm actually previewing the thing right now. I'm looking at one of these videos, and yeah, it's not very impressive. They plug in all this stuff, like iPhones and desktops and a GoPro and stuff, and it just kills it. And then the screen just goes blank. Yeah, it's not that impressive.
But it works.
Yeah, it does work. So if you want to kill your friends, whatever, or families, whatever, just, you know, $50. So it may not be the next greatest tchotchke at the conference, but, it's something for a Christmas stocking stuffer. You might,
We probably should hand them out, like, with our company logos on them.
Probably not. But in case you want to put your competitor's logo on one and drop it in that USB stick bin at the conference.
No, there's that marketing we've been looking for.
There you go. Don't say you got the idea from me. Excellent. Well, moving on. Unless you had anything else to say, Lauren.
No, I think we covered it. Except, you know, I think Nigel's going to have some USB condom stories to tell, but...
Yeah, you can work that in to the next show, a USB condom crossover. So one other thing that's in the news today, and Lauren, maybe you can opine on this. I'm giving your perspective. Apple Watch sales go over a quote-unquote cliff, down at 2.8 million per quarter. And the article actually says million per quarter in a year. So first of all, Lauren, why do we care? And second of all, what do you think about it?
You know, maybe we don't care. I do think it's interesting when we keep waiting for the next thing from Apple, right? You know, a few years ago it was watches. And of course it's the phone with the, you know, no headphone jack or whatever. So it's a little thinner. But I think users now, end users, especially people that aren't total tech heads, are waiting for the next big thing because we no longer are making these purchases like we used to. Like, we're not getting the break from Verizon and from AT&T and things like that. So I think that this was maybe a fad, and maybe we don't care about the watches, and that's the whole point. Yeah. Do you have a watch? Do you have an iWatch of some sort?
You know, it's funny. I actually won this funny little contest we had here at our company where you're supposed to come up with this viral video, and so I made this cute little video with a rabbit and my two-year-old. And won this, and it was like, win an iWatch, or Apple Watch. Sorry for you Apple Watch, you know, purists there. I did a slip on. And I'm like, great, cool. Like, is this Apple Watch, like, in a box? Did you already get it? It's like, well, we haven't got it yet, but we can give you, like, we can buy it for you. I'm like, you know what? Since you haven't bought it yet, can I just get, like, a gift card to the Apple Store?
I'll take
so, actually, I could have gotten it for 100% free. And I chose not to because I wanted to get, I think, an iPhone 6S with like 128, you know, gigs of space or something like that. So I opted for a better iPhone.
Gigs.
Yes, 1 million gigabytes. And and I opted not to get the watch. I opted to get a better phone. So there you go.
That's interesting.
Tim Cook, do what you will with that data point.
Yeah, I had a Moto 360. Well, I still have it, but I don't ever wear it because, first of all, it gave me a rash on my wrist.
Oh, man. Where's
Not
that
to
story?
Get too personal, but.
Where's that story in the news? I don't see, like, you know, Samsung batteries blowing up and Motorola watches giving you rashes. Where's that?
I need, like, an iWatch condom, I guess.
Yes, you do. You need an iWatch condom. You know?
But we'll found that, you know, it was neat, and for being a gadget person, it was fun for a week, and then, as my wife pointed out, you're just going to get sick of it, and you just spent a lot of money for no good reason.
And you know, one fun thing that I found about the Apple Watch is that when you take it out of the box and first turn it on, you actually can't tell what time it is until you pair it with an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
So it does not even tell time.
Although some of them now have internet capabilities on their own. I don't know if that's changed anything.
Maybe you know what the new one does? I mean, the new one, now you can do GPS independently, right, which was a requirement for me. I'm like, I'm sorry, but if I'm going for a run, I don't want to carry my 6 Plus
that's the, like,
in
you,
a backpack.
Oh, right. A lot of people are using it for exercise, and when you could buy a Fitbit for like $200 cheaper, maybe that's a better way to go.
Yeah. I'm thinking that's a better way to go.
I don't need to be... What was interesting to me is I'd be notified on my watch that I had an email, and then I'd be notified on my phone I had the same email, and then I'd be in front of my computer, which was also notifying me through Outlook that I have an email. And it was kind of like... I'm not that important. I don't need to know all this.
Yeah. It's like if you're like this big exec in a meeting, you know, if you're, you know, Elon Musk in your meeting there and you're like, whoa, look at my watch. Oh, I just got an important email.
Right. Yeah. Right.
The NIST just let me know that the 2-page checklist is ready. I better check my phone now for my PDF so I can review it. Hold on one second, board of directors. Yeah, what's the use case there? I mean, and I'm a huge fan, and I'll drop this one because I haven't dropped it yet. I'm a huge fan of Clayton Christensen's jobs theory. For those of you who, you know, don't know who Clayton Christensen, go back and, you know, read The Innovator's Dilemma. He's the father of disruptive innovation and just wrote a book called Competing Against Luck. And jobs theory is this theory about you actually have to understand the actual job that needs to be done and the emotional and social components that go into that job. And so I'm trying to think the job spec for this. Is like, what am I trying to accomplish? Like, you know what? This is what I would write for the job spec. My phone is just too far away. I need something that will alert me whether or not it's actually worth the effort to reach all the way over to my phone, unlock it, and review whatever happens to be on it. That's my job to be done. And while I'm doing it, I want to look like I'm the coolest person in the room.
Right.
So I guess that's what they were going for, but nobody really wanted to hire the watch to do that job.
It was either that use case or instead of being rude and looking at my phone while people are talking to me, I'm going to be less rude, but still kind of rude and just be looking at my watch.
Maybe, you know what I would consider, and we can put this up to a vote for, you know, for those of you who are listening to this, put up to the vote, you know, tweet us out, tell us what is more rude, looking at your phone, which is almost kind of accepted in certain circles, that you just glance at your phone, or looking at your watch, which in many cases signals to be like, you know what, I really need to get out of here, and so, I got something to do, and is that, I feel like that's even more rude, looking at your watch, like, what time, I can't even bother to look at my phone, I'm like, you know, I'm just looking at my watch, I'm like, come on, you guys, this is like that body language you're giving to somebody, like, I want you to wrap it up.
You're just like tapping your foot, alright.
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, that's a true story.
Yeah. We've covered this, haven't we? I think that's my transition. You like how I transitioned that? So, edit note to Nigel. You can cut that part out.
I can't possibly think of another thing to say, so we're going to move on.
Yeah, based on last week's episode, though, that he's probably going to keep that in.
Yeah.
So one other thing I wanted to chat about, which I think is actually really interesting, and you can tell me what you think about this, though, but Amazon unveils what it calls smart convenience stores. And this is really cool, where this is like this 1,800-square-foot store dubbed Amazon Go. It's the latest brick-and-mortar retail in the Amazon, but it's not just, you know, a place to go buy stuff that you can buy on Amazon anywhere. You can actually go in here and buy stuff and not actually have to check out or anything. You just go in and you just like grab what you need and just walk out and it charges
steal
you.
It.
Yeah, just steal it. I'm trying to figure out there's got to be a bunch of ways around actually like getting charged for the stuff that you walk out of the door with.
Yeah, like is there some sort of alarm that deactivates when you scan a QR code or something like that? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and so I guess the whole thing is like much like a driverless car, and you know, threatens to disrupt the whole transportation industry. And just for those, you know, Clayton Christensen disruptive innovation purists, it's not a disruption. It's not actually disruption. It's sustained innovation. But I digress. It's sort of revolutionizing the whole traditional shopping experience where you just go in and you got to scan yourself in, like you take your phone and you scan, kind of like you would for like Apple Pay, and you grab what you need and then you just walk out. And it's great because there's this video of people just like grabbing something and walking out. But what about if you don't have your smartphone? Give it to your friend, and you leave your smartphone, you know, outside, and you just walk in the store and grab what you want and then leave. Does some AI take a picture of you and tag you with, like, a GPS dart or something? It's not in the video. Bezos, I have some unanswered questions that you need to turn into a 2-page checklist.
Yeah, so they don't even, like, scan it with their phone. They just...
No, you don't even scan the individual items. You scan yourself in. Everything's tagged that's in the store, and then you just walk out with it.
Interesting.
Or as you take, you know, it's, and you're supposedly, like, it, you take this stuff off the shelves, and it actually adds it to your shopping list.
But
I don't know how that works.
Back?
I know. You actually, it's funny. In the video, it shows what happens when you put it back. So there you go.
Oh.
Thank you, Amazon. It shows you, like, you know.
Clearly, I didn't watch the video.
It's called the sensor infusion, you know, just walk out technology. There's a whole lot of marketing kind of, you know, names that are being given to it. But it's just cool. Like, you just add stuff to your little bag or something, and it knows what you grabbed. And at the end, you see, oh, look, this is what it cost me. But if they charge you wrong for something... What happens? Like, if for some reason the technology doesn't work and it charges me for, like, a Coke and I bought $100 worth of stuff, who's going to walk back into the store and say, hey, you guys, to no check service people or no checkout people at all that are even there? They'll be like, what? You missed this.
Well, it's kind of like those automated room – or not room service, but minibar things, you know?
Yeah.
And you take it out and you're, like, just checking the ingredients or whatever, and then you're like, oh shit, it just charged me because it's automated.
Yep.
Or if you don't get caught and, you know, you take their mini bar stuff anyway.
Yep.
Not that I would ever do that.
No, I wouldn't either. But no, if they can accomplish this and really get the tech right and not have any mistakes made, you know, during the whole shopping experience. Which I imagine you can preview before you even walk out. You do a quick preview and then walk out before you do that. If they can do that, oh man, what I love. Because I love the self-checkout. Like, my little Lucky stores, for those in California, you know, even know what Lucky's is, because it barely exists now. It's almost a defunct brand. But my Lucky store down the corner, I just walk in, I grab everything I want. I don't talk to a single human being. And what a wonderful world that is, Lauren. We can all just stop talking to people. And I just cruise on out, and I zip on out, and my 2-year-old gets to scan things, you know, and then put it in a bag, and some AI measures the weight of whatever is on there and says, I'm sorry, sir, but I think you might be trying to steal something. You haven't put everything in there. And if you don't do it right, or your 2-year-old pulls it out of the, you know, the bag and tries to run off with it, and a real person will actually approach you and say, hey, I just want to make sure that you scanned everything. But when it all works right... You just go and you scan it all yourself, and then you just get out of the store without any lines or any talking to people. You do Apple Pay and swipe your phone, and it's just beautiful. And if you don't, you can skip that part. It'd be perfect. I just want to throw my stuff in the cart and want to get out of there. Is that too much to ask? Am I asking too much of the world?
No, I think it's fantastic. I think it's so hot. You know, this isn't our hot or not, but I think it's an amazing idea, especially just the lines. I mean, I don't even care if I have to talk to the cashier or, you know, run a U-scan or whatever, but it's the lines that are just such a pain in the ass, and we're not patient anymore. So
yeah.
I'm all props to Bezos on this. I hope it does work.
I really, really hope, because I'll be shopping at that Amazon store every day. If that is the case, if I don't have to talk to people or even scan stuff myself, that's a
what
that's
are
a
they going to sell?
It looks like this is just me watching the video. It looks like just about everything you'd find in a Whole Foods. It looks like a Whole Foods actually in the video. So I'd imagine that Whole Foods might partner up with Amazon and create an Amazon powered Whole Foods store. And that would be great. And I can walk in and have my sort of, you know, crunchy Bay Area, California Whole Foods experience, but not have to talk to people. And that's the irony. It's like all these people would be like, great, I can walk in and have earthy, wonderful love experience in this grocery store. But I don't want to talk to people, humans, and smile at other people and have to interact with. No, but I just want my own little wonderful experience.
No more smelling patchouli on other people.
Namaste.
Now, what do you think this will do to Walmart? I mean, Walmart's got its own grocery stuff, of course, and I imagine they'll get into, if this Amazon store thing works out, I imagine they'll get into selling other things. Do you think Walmart should be concerned?
Oh, yeah. Walmart should be very concerned if Amazon gets into the brick and mortar space. This is going to service a very, it's going to serve very much the Whole Foods, crowd. It's going to be high end. There's going to be a premium on all the items because it's going to have to pay for the overhead. But if they manage to scale this out and create a Target-like experience and price point with that automation technology at scale, oh yeah, that's a Walmart killer right there. Because they've beaten Walmart online and on the ground in the real world. And that's a death nail in Walmart's coffin. Then they'll have to really, really service the low end. And if right. Amazon never decides to touch that, then Walmart can still eke out an existence at a very razor-thin margin. But there'd have to be a business model shift for them to really remain relevant from, you know, a stockholder standpoint. That's my take.
Who do you think was at an advantage? Amazon coming from, you know, the online world and then going into brick and mortar, or Walmart going from brick and mortar into online?
Definitely Amazon. This is an excellent, yeah. Lauren, let me tell you, that is an excellent question.
Well, thank you. Once in a while, I get that brain, those brain waves moving.
Kudos to you for pulling that one. That was a fan. I think that yes, Amazon had the profound advantage of really nailing down the whole, you know, distribution chain, and Walmart too. I mean, they created that from one, exactly from the way you said it. They created that whole supply chain from the brick and mortar to, like, you know, the distribution warehouse, you know, and then built the online presence. Amazon did the other way around, where they built the online and then created that whole wonderful distribution chain. And Amazon has a massive advantage where you have that, you have both, where you're like, you know what, there's a whole bunch of people that would buy from us if we had a differentiated experience plus whatever selection advantage that, you know, that our pricing power advantage that we had. And then once you throw drones into the whole thing, if you can just just order something from a distro warehouse and have it delivered that day and go pick it up at the store because a drone dropped it and now it's there, oh man, I'm sorry, but Walmart's dead once you add the drones in there. Sorry, Walmart. No chance. No chance. So maybe we want to pivot here from Amazon, Walmart, and drones to steel cage death match. Autonomy versus HP. Steel cage death match. Two enter, one leaves. Lauren, what's your take on this whole... Give us an idea of what this is even about, the autonomy versus HP.
So HP was buying... It does say HP here. I don't know if it's actually HP or HPE. Do you know?
Oh, God. I can't keep the two just straight. I was at a conference and I asked one of the, like, a senior director who was at HP or HP. I can't remember. And he's like, how do I say the name of your company?
Well, so basically, HP was going to buy Autonomy, and they paid Lynch, who's the founder of Autonomy, $730 million. Now it's trying to recover that money for what it thinks it overpaid for Autonomy, which is a big data company.
Verizon HP started all this. They started winning discounts for Yahoo. And now everyone yeah, wants to go back to the original deal. It's like, hey, can we get a discount?
Right. But HP ended up having to write down nearly $9 billion of the $11 billion buyout after Autonomy fell apart in its arms.
I like that.
I love how they put it. Just, like, it's the Pieta. And Lynch is just like, you know.
Yes, I like it. I picked it up and it just all just disintegrated.
Right.
It's like that poor kid who bought that, you know, that big gigantic Transformer toy that was advertised, and they tried to play with it, and all of a sudden it just kind of started to come apart there. they run crying to the store going,
Lynch is apparently countersuing for $160 million, claiming the fraud suit ruined his reputation. So, you know, he's in the middle of raising all this money and doing this and that, and then all of a sudden HP sues him. So it kind of screws his company, obviously. But if it truly did fall apart, then maybe there was something to that.
maybe. But as he did say in the fraud suit, he said that they owned it for a year before they said anything about it being a real problem. So is that really their fault? But of course, I mean, to you know, autonomy is defense. I mean, it's at least a year before a large company figures out anything, isn't it?
That's true.
Yeah. And we got to at least go through four quarters of figuring all this stuff and reintegration and then all that stuff. And all of a sudden you see four quarters unless you're really, hey, wait a minute, this is broken.
And that's if we haven't forgotten about what the hell we were talking about to begin with.
And they haven't spun it out as a separate company that they then purchase.
Right.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know what we expect to happen with this. I don't imagine autonomy is going to have a lot of room to stand here. I mean, it just doesn't seem like... I guess what I'm trying to say is it's basically a startup. They already have a bad reputation, and they're going up against Goliath here. And while we'd all love to believe that David sometimes wins, Goliath probably usually wins.
Yeah. David comes out looking cooler, but... rarely ever actually wins. And then usually David ends up with a whole bunch of money in his pocket too. Just not the title.
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah.
Fair point. Yeah, maybe there's something to this David thing.
Yeah, maybe being David's not so bad. Yeah. Even if David loses,
I don't need
all
the title.
Yeah. I'd like $170 million, please. You know,
yeah,
I'll take
problem.
A hit to my reputation if that's it. That means I get $170 million.
I can start writing that novel I've always wanted to. Mm-hmm.
Start that VC firm that, you know, you're trying to get, you know.
That's right. Yeah. I'll team up with Ashton Kutcher or something.
There you go. Ashton Kutcher did, like, you know, go punk this. Mm-hmm. You have like a VC version of, you know, You Got Punked. You call it. You got unicorned. But you think you were going to unicorn. You just got unicorned.
Right, you're like, yeah, you get $40 million, and then a week later you're like, just kidding.
Dude, we've got the next reality TV show hit right here. You got punked unicorn style.
Oh, Silicon Valley would just be like on its ass after that, I think.
Geez, these poor people. We'd have to give them something in the show. They think they're getting $40 million, and they're going around telling everyone that they're like, you know, they're in, and then you go to the end, and you come in like, hey, did you realize you know, we're not actually giving you any money, right? You just got
pumped. Could team up with Apple to give them Apple Watches.
There you go. As consolation
done and done.
Prize. So with that being said, Lauren, do you want to move into our hot or not?
Let's do it.
Let's do this. So you got this hot. You got the hot or not this week. So go ahead and kick it off.
We were talking about the Amazon stores, and it actually brought up this image of brainwaves and using that for checking out, if you will. But the hot or not this week is basically using brainwaves as passwords. So whereas, you know, if you cut off someone's finger to use the fingerprint,
yeah,
that can't be changed ever, right? But they're saying with brainwaves, we actually can. And what they do is they'll give us an acronym or give us a word, and our brain will think of something, and apparently it's unique to other people. Now, they had like an N=75 number in this experiment, so I don't know if 75 people had a unique experience. That means 7 billion people will.
Yeah, they read a list of 75 acronyms.
Right. Oh, that's right. Yeah, 75 acronyms, but it was still an N=, pretty small.
Yeah. To be able to get through. So my first question, though, for you, Lauren, maybe the article doesn't really speak to it, but what happens to those who just don't have brain waves sufficient to even trigger a response to actually initiate a password unlock? Maybe your just brain just doesn't, it's not electric enough.
It's
you
electric.
Just, you don't have enough power in your brain to power a password authentication system based on brain waves. I wonder, that would just be sad.
Well, maybe they wouldn't be important enough to have a brainwave password.
Yeah, there you go.
Although there are probably a lot of very important, successful people out there that maybe don't have the brainwaves to power a password.
I'll let those within the social media universe, you know, opine on that.
My other question was, if someone is trying to hack, you know, get your password or whatever, what if they just kidnapped you and put you in front of the acronym or whatever is inciting this brainwave?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you prevent that?
That's a high touch proposition right there. You can't just cut off their finger. You got to sit in front of them and, like, you know, while they're under duress, and imagine their brain activity is probably a little bit different while they read the acronyms. But who knows? if you kidnap someone's family, they might just be inspired to do just about anything.
That's true. Yeah, a whole new version of ransomware.
There you go.
So what do you think, hot or not?
Oh, man. You know what? I am very lukewarm on this. It sounds like it should be really hot, but it's just not pushing the needle for me. It's not pushing in the hat category. So it's like one of those things where, like, they ask the audience to applaud on the TV show, and the needle starts to go up, and then it goes back down, and the sound effect goes, wah, 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 wah. That's what this is for me.
All right. Yeah, I feel that. I have to say it's hot. Not maybe for what it is right now or what the experiment's showing us, but there's got to be something bigger with this. Like I said, like maybe they're going to use our brainwaves to buy things and charge their credit card later or whatever if we're using at that point. Monopoly money, maybe. I'm not sure. But there's got to be something where we don't have to be microchipped, for example. If we can use our own natural electricity within our bodies and brains and whatnot to move into the future, I think that's pretty hot. I think Nigel would think it's hot.
You would think, oh, look at that. You're virtually bringing Nigel in this just to tip the scales in your favor. I see what you're doing.
That's right. That's right. He's going to do the editing, so.
That's right. He'll edit this just the way to massage it just the way. There's two things to this. One is, just like verification that you're a human being within, you know, the password sphere powered by Google, let's say you've got to go ahead and look at some image that Google put and go ahead and type what's in there, and it powers Google machine learning. I think this would, if adopted to a wide enough audience, fuel a machine learning algorithm that Google would then harness to be able to map your brainwaves and know what you're thinking about in order to sell more advertising to you. That's the creepy part of it. But what, you know, sure. What would make it? I'll double down on this. I'll give this a chance. What would make this hot for me, Lauren, was if I could initiate my own thought and map that out as my password, and then initiate that thought again, and then have that authenticate me. Now that would be screaming red hot. That would be awesome.
Interesting.
If I could just think my password.
Right.
And then therefore my password, even though if it was just the password was password, my brain would react differently than anyone else who thought that same word.
It would
word.
At least be password one.
Exactly. Password one. It would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I would think it, and then it would just unlock whatever I wanted to by reading my brainwaves, or, you know, I could buy my super burrito at the Amazon store.
But you could have a new password every single time.
You could. You could actually have a rotating thing.
Like, keys would be useless now. Like, mm-hmm. We could walk in our doors and, you know, start our cars and...
See, that's screaming hot.
Just with our bodies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it now.
With our minds. But then, like, what happens? Mm-hmm. Like, someone hits you over the head with a baseball bat and you can't get in your house? How does that work?
We'd need some sort of fail-safe mechanism.
Yeah, we probably would. There you go. We'll work that in somehow. Some sort of keypad, maybe a second, you know, mm-hmm. dual-factor authentication for brainwave password retrieval.
Yeah.
If I've forgotten my password, how do I know to think it? Damn! I've forgotten password thumbprint. Your password is rhubarb. And with that, Lauren, do you think that's it?
I think the audience is going to want more of you and me, Yadin.
That's right. We're on fire then. We killed it. I'm not sure what we killed, but we killed it.
We killed something. We USB mm-hmm. killed something.
Yeah, and Nigel can decide to cut here at any point. Well, if you've listened this far, thank you. Welcome to, or thank you for listening to another episode of In Tech We Trust.